This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The first half of the legislative biennium is officially over. Sure, lawmakers left the statehouse in Montpelier a month ago, but it takes a little while for the flurry of bills passed in the waning moments to wind their way through the process, and then for the governor to have the requisite 5 days to sign, veto, or let it go into law without a signature. On June 20th, Governor Phil Scott signed the last 5 bills remaining for him to act on. This year, Scott signed nearly everything that crossed his desk. He did allow some things to go into law without his signature, and he vetoed 2 bills. VPR Statehouse reporter Peter Hirschfeld is here to talk about the 2 vetoes that marked the session. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Jane.
Let's get the basics of the 2 bills that the governor vetoed. Can you talk about the legislation that would have required a waiting period for firearms purchases?
Yeah, and this is definitely the easier one to explain.
Right.
Very simply creates a 24-hour waiting period for handgun purchases. You go to a gun shop, select the firearm you want to purchase, pass a background check, and pay for the gun just as you would now. But instead of getting that gun immediately, after the transaction is complete, you have to come back in 24 hours to actually take receipt of the weapon.
And the idea here for advocates who are pushing for the bill was that it would perhaps prevent impulsive acts of violence, especially self-inflicted violence.
Yeah, these kinds of laws are often referred to as cooling off periods. And that's exactly the idea, that somebody who has an idea in their head related to violence in one moment might not feel so strongly about that if you give them a day.
How broad was the support in the legislature for this bill?
It was pretty significant. You had a supermajority approving this legislation in the Senate. In the House, the count was not that overwhelming, but still pretty comfortable margin of passage, 82 votes in favor, 52 against, well more than enough to get it to the governor's desk, as lawmakers are coming to the realization right now, probably not enough to override a veto.
And why did the governor say he didn't support this bill?
You know, he said Phil Scott said he looked at the research related to waiting periods in the 9 states that have them, and he said he didn't see anything that made him feel like there was going to be a causal effect in Vermont between a waiting period and a reduction in gun violence. He said, you know, we passed a number of new restrictions on gun ownership last year. We all remember that well. Universal background checks, high capacity magazine ban, raising the legal age to purchase a gun to 21 years old. He said his preference is to give the state a few years to acclimate to that new statutory landscape before it proceeds with anything else.
So the second bill, Pete, was a medical monitoring bill. And as you suggested, it's slightly more complicated to explain, but have at it.
Yeah, more complicated to explain, but what it does is actually pretty straightforward. We have causes of action in the legal system, right? A cause of action is something you can sue somebody for. And this bill would create another cause of action, another thing that you can sue somebody for in the Vermont court system. And that thing you could sue for is called medical monitoring, which is basically regular health screenings by a physician to see if you're developing a certain disease or condition. The reason lawmakers wanted this language is we all remember that terrible episode down in Bennington where hundreds of residents found out that their drinking wells were contaminated with high levels of a toxic chemical called PFOA. This substance had been released into local water supplies by a former manufacturing plant, which was using the PFOA to make Teflon. If you consume lots of PFOA, you're at higher risk statistically for a number of health conditions. The earlier you can detect those conditions, the more successfully you're going to be able to treat them. So a lot of people whose wells were contaminated are getting that medical monitoring. And this bill says, you know, if residents can demonstrate to a court that a certain company is probably responsible for that chemical release, then that court should be able to order that company to pay for the cost of the medical monitoring.
And in this case, I think the legislative support was even broader or bigger than the previous bill we were talking about?
Well, double-edged sword here. It was much higher in the House. The House actually had the 100 votes that it would need to override a veto. I talked to House Speaker Mitzi Johnson. She's very optimistic that they would be able to hold those 100 votes if they were to attempt a veto override. In the Senate, though, it was a 19-11 vote, and that means that the Senate is exactly one vote short of the 2/3 supermajority needed to override a veto. Whether or not they can get that vote remains to be seen. Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash assured me yesterday that he is going to be trying to find it. But, you know, it's tough to get somebody to change their mind on a piece of legislation like that. There's some obvious candidates. There were five Democrats that voted against the bill. Maybe Tim Ash can try to use some Senate presidential influence to get one of them to change their mind. But he said it's going to be a tough lift.
And before we get to when that might happen, because it's not going to be in the next couple of months, why was the governor opposed to this bill?
He says he believes the industry, the manufacturing industry, when they say that this is going to have a severe and adverse impact on Vermont's business climate. You know, industry lobbyists say that this bill would make Vermont a real outlier. There are other states that have causes of action that allow people to sue for medical monitoring. But they say the Vermont law would create the lowest evidentiary barrier in the country for a judge being able to award those damages. They say to drive up the cost of liability insurance for a number of industries in Vermont, that people might want to leave the state if we enacted this. And Phil Scott said he thinks they make a compelling point.
Now, sometimes when there's a veto, the legislature reconvenes for a special veto session to see if they can overturn a governor's veto. Why isn't that happening this year?
You know, they could have done that. What Missy Johnson said is we are not going to have a full roster. When the House adjourned, they were still down one Democratic lawmaker. Springfield Representative Robert Forgeits passed away during the session. Phil Scott had not yet announced a replacement for Representative Forgeits. Mitzi Johnson said, if we're going to try to override something, I want to make sure that we have all our people in place to do that. And she thought it would behoove the body to wait until January for that purpose.
So she could have called a special veto session. Would she have had to do that before they left, or could that happen
now?
Yeah,
you got it. That's a decision that they make prior to passing an adjournment resolution. And it's that resolution that determines when lawmakers are going to come back.
So had the governor passed the budget? Had he signed the budget by the time they passed their adjournment measure?
No, he had not.
So what would I know this is purely theoretical, so we're going down a side street here, Pete. But because no one anticipated the governor would veto the budget, obviously no one thought that they needed to call a special session. But what if he had? What would they have done?
The people that wrote our Constitution thankfully thought of this possible scenario. And the Constitution gives the governor the power to call the legislature back to Montpelier at any day and time he wishes.
He
could have done it. If he had vetoed the budget, that's exactly what he would have done. He would have said, I'm calling the legislature back. We're going to meet in the State House on such a time and on such a date. So we would not be entering the new fiscal year without any money.
And you mentioned that Mitzi Johnson and Tim Ash, the Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate, would be trying to come up with a way to override the governor's veto. They can actually do that in January when they reconvene?
They can do that. And whether or not they actually try to do both remains to be seen. My guess is that they might not take up the waiting period bill because it's a pretty foregone conclusion. We may well, though, see an override attempt for this medical monitoring bill.
And so that happens in January. Are they likely, if not, trying to override the bill to try to do something to work with the governor to ensure passage?
Most definitely on the medical monitoring. Whether or not they can work with the governor is another question, but the medical monitoring issue, they insist, is not dead, even if they can't override the veto. And they say there's still a lot of momentum to get something passed next year, either with industry support and support from the governor or not. As for the waiting period, it sounds like the interest really would be in maneuvering to something that the governor might look more favorably upon. Governor Phil Scott has signaled some openness to a gun measure that isn't the waiting period, and lawmakers say they want to hear what he has in mind.
All right. Well, we'll have to see in January. Peter Hirschfeld is one of VPR's State House reporters. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you, Jay.